Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or it's easier to use a computer or a smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK World Radio Japan, France 24, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. A World Economic Forum survey shows Japan is very weak on global gender equality rankings, with Iceland and Finland leading the chart. The foreign ministers of countries in the BRICS organization gathered in central Russia, including the 5 new members, Egypt, Ethiopia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. Switzerland is hosting a peace conference on Ukraine. 90 countries and organizations will attend, but Russia was not invited. There's a G7 meeting in Italy where leaders will approve a $50 billion recovery loan to Ukraine by using frozen Russian assets as collateral. Some European countries believe this is illegal. NHK Japan.
A survey shows Japan's standing in global gender equality rankings still trails behind most of the world. The result highlights the country's slow pace of progress for women in both the political and economic spheres. The World Economic Forum released its annual Global Gender Gap Report on Wednesday. Japan ranks 118th among 146 nations. Its ranking rose 7 places from 125th last year. Iceland tops the list for the 15th year in a row. It's followed by Finland, Norway, and New Zealand. The rankings cover 4 areas: economic participation and opportunity, educational attainment, health and survival, and political empowerment. Women in Japan were almost equal to men in education and healthcare, but as in past surveys, they scored poorly in the other categories. The report says the share of women in legislative, senior official, and managerial roles in the country is 14.6%. The figure is up 1.7 percentage points from last year, but is still among the world's lowest. The report also warns it would take 134 years to achieve equality worldwide at the current pace.
The foreign ministers of countries in the BRICS framework have gathered in central Russia. The 2-day meeting will cover cooperation in the fields of security, economy, and other issues. This is the first meeting of the group since Iran, the United Arab Emirates, Egypt, and other nations joined this year. Russia's foreign minister is expecting representatives of over 20 countries that are friendly to Russia from the Middle East, Asia, and Africa. He says that shows stronger interest in the BRICS group.
Our agenda is extensive and includes issues that will directly affect the multipolar world order.
Russia is apparently using the occasion to raise the profile of the BRICS framework and boost ties with Global South countries to counter the Western bloc. On the sidelines of the BRICS meeting, Lavrov had a bilateral meeting with his Chinese counterpart, Wang Yi. He thanked Wang for China for not attending the Ukraine Peace Conference to be held in Switzerland this weekend. The conference is aimed at laying the groundwork for a peace plan proposed by Ukraine. Russia has not been invited, China indicated last month that it would be unlikely to attend. The Russian Foreign Ministry quoted Lavrov as telling One that Moscow is grateful for what he called Beijing's balanced and consistent approach to the situation in Ukraine. He went on to criticize the conference for not considering Russia's equitable participation. One reportedly emphasized that China fully supports Russia's role as a BRICS chair. One said China will work with Russia to promote unity and self-improvement of global South nations.
NHK has learned the draft version of a joint statement for the upcoming Ukraine peace summit does not include one of the country's key demands, the withdrawal of Russian forces. Switzerland hosts the International Conference on Peace in Ukraine this weekend. The Swiss government says representatives from 90 countries and organizations are expected to attend. The gathering is aimed at realizing the 10-point peace plan proposed by Kyiv. But the draft statement NHK has obtained refers to only 3 points. They're the safety of nuclear power plants, food security, as well as the release of all prisoners and the return of children taken to Russia. There's no mention of restoring Ukraine's territorial integrity. Diplomatic sources say the withdrawal of Russian troops, among other points, were dropped in consideration of countries that maintain ties with Russia. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky expects the peace summit to offer a framework that'll give his country an upper hand in ending the war. Russia is not participating in the gathering, but has been busy with a different one, hosting a BRICS foreign ministers meeting. It says the group's framework will play a central role in a new global system. The two-day event started Monday and included representatives from China, India, and other emerging countries. Russia currently chairs BRICS. It says the group has expanded to 10 members, with Iran, the United Arab Emirates, and others joining this year. The World Bank says the members have about 45% of the world's population. Moscow says 22 nations were expected to take part in Tuesday's session, including Thailand and Turkey. We start in Italy, where a group of seven leaders plan to provide a loan worth about $50 billion to Ukraine by using frozen Russian assets. That's according to their summit draft statement obtained by NHK. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni welcomed them to the venue in the southern region of Puglia on Thursday. Their first session was on Africa, climate change, and development, followed by one on the Middle East. A session on Ukraine is also on the agenda, with President Volodymyr Zelensky attending. The group's idea is to provide the loan to the country by the end of this year by using frozen Russian assets as collateral. The assets of Russian individuals frozen by Western nations, Japan, and others are worth a combined $58 billion. And assets worth $285 billion held by the Russian Central Bank have also been frozen. Experts say it's unlikely confiscating the assets is legal. Some European countries have voiced concerns. Earlier, White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby spoke about the idea.
We will announce new steps to unlock the value of the immobilized Russian sovereign assets to benefit Ukraine and to help them recover from the destruction.
The U.S. government has proposed using interest on the frozen assets of Russia's central bank and their operating profits to help Ukraine. And the United States says it hopes to secure $50 billion. If the war in Ukraine ends, Western nations would immediately be pressured to unfreeze the assets, effectively losing the source of funds. Those nations could then be obliged to prepare additional funds to help Ukraine with its reconstruction.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. On shortwave, they are now heard at 10 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp and most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. All the times they announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, France 24. European Union parliamentary elections saw the far right leading the pack, including in France. So President Macron dissolved the French parliament and called for snap elections in 3 weeks. The elected parliament will choose a new French prime minister, possibly far-right candidate Jordan Bardella. First, we will hear some press reviews on the surprising shift in French politics, then a report on the severe losses the Green Party experienced in most of Europe, except for Netherlands and Sweden. Then an interview with Kathy Brown from Cambridge University on how and why the far-right political parties gain strength in most EU nations. She describes the normalization of exclusionary politics over a period of years, including the role of the mainstream media reporting on immigration. France 24.
French President Emmanuel Macron dissolving Parliament. Crucial question, or one of the crucial questions, is what are the papers saying about it? Leo McGuinn is joining us now to look at exactly that, Leo.
Yeah, that news rocking France last night, unsurprisingly, on the front page of every single French newspaper. I'll start with La Croix, who have the headline, "The Earthquake of the Dissolution." The president says he wants to give the floor back to the French. The newspapers say that this outcome is not short-sighted, but places France on the brink of an abyss, given the National Rally is approaching these elections from a position of strength. Aujourd'hui en France call the announcement a clap of thunder. They describe it as a presidential game of poker being played by Macron. The more right-leaning newspaper Le Figaro is one of the few to not have Macron front and centre. Instead, they have Jordan Bardella, the 28-year-old, leading the National Rally to a historic result last night, winning nearly a third of the vote on the back of a wave of support, as Le Figaro describe it. Let me try and show you the scale of the victory for the National Rally yesterday. This is in Le Monde this morning. This graphic, the brown, shows how the different communes voted, the 35,000 different communes. All the dark brown is for the far right and the National Rally. You can see that Paris is really the only area that strayed away from the far right, as well as parts of the southeast. The left-leaning Libération again have Jordan Bardella on the front page, opposite the President of the Republic, with the headline, "The Extreme Gamble." According to Libé, the most likely consequence of this gamble is for Bardella to become Prime Minister before the start of the Olympic Games at the end of July. The Macronian gamble is perhaps in order to prove that the National Rally cannot solve France's problems. L'Humanité have a very similar headline to Libération, "The Crazy Gamble." The paper calls for a leap of faith from the left. They finish with this: "Heads I win, tails Le Pen wins, Macron tells voters."
Across Europe, voters prioritise economic and migration policies over the planet, as Green parties were the biggest losers of this year's European parliamentary elections. After their best ever results in 2019, the Greens are now left with 53 seats, down from 72.
I find it disappointing that the Greens performed so poorly. They're the only party that actually does something sensible, but they are being boycotted and sabotaged over again by citizens, because everyone wants to protect the environment, but not at their own expense.
Traditionally a Green stronghold, the party's vote share nearly halved in Germany. In France, the main Green party, EELV, won just 5% of the vote. Yet not all was lost for the Greens. In Netherlands, the alliance of Greens and socialist leaders came out on top, while the Swedish Greens secured 13.6% of the vote. But analysts say that security and economic troubles drown out environmental concerns for voters.
Like in Germany or like in Italy, young people have moved from concern for the survival of the planet, Greta Thunberg, the Green, to concern for the identity of their country.
As the Green faction loses momentum, the European Green Deal, a package of cross-party environmental policies, may also be up for debate. With policies for reducing greenhouse gas emissions and increasing renewables, the deal has already faced challenges in recent months by the centre-right European People's Party, a party now in the majority.
Joining me live now for some analysis is Dr. Kathy Brown. She's a researcher who focuses on far-right politics in Europe. Great to talk to you today. It has been the most extraordinary couple of days here in Paris. Zoom out a little for us. What is it that you make of what we're seeing? What's particularly struck you?
Well, I think it's quite easy to get bogged down in the drama of the situation, both within the Republicans Party and the extreme right. But I think we need to actually think about what this means in terms of the normalization of far-right politics. I think we need to move away from the strategies behind it and think about how this could further lend to the mainstreaming of exclusionary politics, with people at the sharp end of far-right politics suffering the consequences the most. That's where the story really lies.
Well, let's talk a bit more about that then. The National Rally for years really have been trying to portray themselves as a mainstream party. Has what we've seen over the past few days, does that suggest to you that they've succeeded in that?
I mean, you can think about it in two ways. We've obviously seen this huge response to the Republicans joining forces with them, where there's almost this desire to maintain physical distance from the far right. But actually, we've seen this level of normalization occur over many, many years. So while people are expressing outrage at it, we could view this as deeply hypocritical. So you had Macron saying that the decision of the Republicans was turning their back on the legacy of De Gaulle, Chirac and Nicolas Sarkozy. But it's actually a continuation of this long process of normalizing far-right politics. If you take Sarkozy as an example, back in 2007, he was saying that he was seeking out the Front National's electorate one by one. So we've hardly seen principled opposition from the mainstream in the past. So yes, we can view this as part of that process of mainstreaming, but we also need to view the key role played by mainstream parties in this process themselves.
Right. And of course, we need to take opinion polling with a big grain of salt. But currently, they do suggest that the National Rally, the party we're talking about here, could win the most seats in that election in just 3 weeks' time, although not necessarily enough for an absolute majority in Parliament. If that happens, how significant is that in your view?
Well, of course, it would be extremely significant from an electoral perspective. But I think, again, we need to think about what we've been witnessing over the past few years under Macron as well. You know, with his immigration bill in January, the ban on the abaya in schools, we've seen classic far-right politics be adopted within the mainstream in France. And this has been happening over a number of years. So yes, of course, we must be concerned about these elections and what they mean should the RN do well. And this is a huge risk that Macron is taking, particularly for those who are at the sharp end of this politics. But we also need to be thinking about actual alternatives that don't push the same kinds of politics that the far right has done for many years.
Right. And when you talk about those who are at the sharp end of this kind of politics, tell us about the kinds of people that you're thinking of there. Who's going to be most impacted by the rise of the far right here?
Well, you can think about a number of minoritized communities. Obviously, a huge area for the far right is immigration, and that will be something that they are going to push in the build up to this. So people coming to France, also Muslims as well, with the attacks on Muslim women's rights, etc. So there are a huge number of groups that could be impacted by this. And I think we really need to maintain a focus on what it means for them and think of alternatives that strive to combat these inequalities.
Just a final question for you then. Speaking of alternatives, you may have seen what left-wing groups are trying to do here in France to build a kind of alliance ahead of that election. Do you think that's going to work? Is that going to provide the kind of buffer that you believe is needed now?
Look, this is a real opportunity to defeat the far right and the mainstream that has been enabling them for years. But it also requires change in the left too, where we need to see that real alternative put forward. They've spent far too long fighting the far right on their ground. If you think back to François Hollande's tenure in 2015, he attempted to allow the stripping of French citizenship from dual nationals who were convicted of terrorism. These are kind of the classic areas that the far right likes to battle on. So I think we need to see them speak to people's everyday concerns that they experience in their day-to-day lives and not fight the far right on the ground that it wants to be fighting on.
Cathy Brown, great to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Those reports and interview were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. They're also available at most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the Shortwave Report or could help support this program, like longtime listeners in Modesto and Willits, California did this week, you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490. My online support information is available at my website, outfarpress.com. Many thanks to everyone who has ever helped to keep this freely distributed show airborne. Please keep it up. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Julian Assange will have his appeal heard on July 9th in London to stop extradition to the United States. The latest Israeli mass attack on Palestinians killed at least 274 while rescuing 4 hostages. Israel will receive 25 F-35 stealth fighter jets financed by U.S. military aid to Israel, despite growing criticism against support. The British government continues to allow export of military equipment to Israel, despite international pressure to halt these arms sales. Radio Havana, Cuba.
WikiLeaks' founder Julian Assange's appeal against extradition from Britain to the United States will be heard next month, court officials in London said on Tuesday. The 52-year-old Australian-born political prisoner is fighting extradition to the United States, where he's charged with on 18 counts, nearly all under the Espionage Act, these relating to WikiLeaks' mass release of secret U.S. documents, the largest security breaches of their kind in U.S. military history. WikiLeaks' revelation showed the extensive war crimes committed by the U.S., publishing U.S. military logs from the wars of aggression against Afghanistan and Iraq, and U.S. diplomatic cables. Last month, the High Court in London granted him permission for an appeal over his argument he might not be able to rely on his right to free speech at a trial in the U.S. That appeal will now be held on Tuesday, July the 9th, Wednesday, July the 10th, according to a statement from the spokesperson for Britain's judicial office in London. The death toll from Israeli strikes on a densely populated refugee camp in central Gaza has risen to 274, with hundreds of civilians injured in the attack. In an update on Sunday, Gaza's health ministry said 274 Palestinians were killed, up from 210 it reported on Saturday, and 698 were injured when Israeli forces stormed into the densely populated Al-Nusayrat camp. The statement noted some victims remained under the rubble amidst heavy bombardment and a lack of rescue crews. Israeli forces launched the raid in broad daylight, claiming to strike at military infrastructure in the camp as part of a rescue operation. But witnesses and journalists on the ground say Israel bombed residential buildings, leading to higher casualties. Global condemnation poured in over the weekend after the Israeli regime's latest act of aggression. Doctors described the scenes inside Al-Aqsa Hospital in central Gaza as a complete bloodbath, with one medic saying the inside of the hospital looks like a slaughterhouse. Doctors Without Borders, MSF, says Al-Aqsa and Nasser hospitals are overwhelmed. Meanwhile, the U.S. Agency for Palestinian Refugees cites a UNICEF report that 9 out of 10 children in Gaza are experiencing severe food shortage. The Israeli military has announced it has signed a $3 billion deal with the United States to buy 25 F-35 stealth fighter jets built by Lockheed Martin. Israeli officials say the warplanes will be financed by U.S. military aid to Israel. This comes despite growing calls for the U.S. to cut off arms sales to Israel. Last week, the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, called on U.S. President Joe Biden to draw a red line and halt arms shipments to Israel, citing the mounting death toll in Gaza, where over 36,700 Palestinians have been killed in the past 8 months. NAACP CEO Derek Johnson told reporters, quote, "We witness individuals in Gaza who are civilians being attacked, and they went to what was supposed to be safe zones, these things that are avoidable. The United States must take a moral stand to protect civilian innocent children and lives." Britain has issued more than 100 export licenses for the sale of weapons and military equipment to Israel since the regime launched its savage military campaign in the besieged Gaza Strip in October. These, according to government figures. New data released by the Business Department on Tuesday indicates that these licenses facilitate manufacturers to export various types of UK-made military and non-military equipment to Israel. Military equipment covered under these licenses includes components essential for the operation of aircraft, vehicles and combat naval vessels. A total of 345 licenses to sell arms to Israel were still active as of the end of May this year, including those issued before October. According to the statistics, no UK arms export license application was rejected or revoked, despite growing international pressure on Western governments to halt arms sales to Israel. Ministers in three separate decisions, December, April and May, rejected calls to suspend arms exports to the regime. The value of UK-approved arms exports to Israel was £42 million in 2022, and the publication of the figure for the whole of 2023 is due later this week. The British weapons industry has been cashing in on the genocide in Gaza, with a pivotal role being played by BAE Systems. Several international bodies and UK campaign groups have repeatedly raised concerns about Israel's use of military equipment in Gaza. The decision to publish the figures comes as Britain's two human rights organisations, Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, are seeking to join a claim for judicial review about arms sales to Israel. The case is due to be heard early October.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website's working well at radiohc.cu. There's no podcast, however. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You'll have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website, along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For the first 27 years, the Shortwave Report was produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury, so I'm staying at a house that is connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.